I think it's a friendly club. In the past years, we've had one or two people who were angry about this and that. That's all gone. It's just such a friendly place. I always felt perfectly at home in the Ambulance, right from the very start. I started the sail in 1937 in Rangers crew, and I gradually learned a bit more about sailing as I went on. Dad was a skipper and so on. And I've made countless friends, and I used to have lunch parties down there. I'd get a dozen friends down, not necessarily from the sailing world, but I had permission to go down there and I'd cook fish, and the girls would bring salad, and that was all good. But I did that mostly at girls' house because I liked the look of them. And I had me about 12 girls down there, and I didn't suffer much from that. I felt I could walk into the club, and some bloke I didn't know, good old, my name is Bill Gale, I'm Billy Smith, but they were always, almost always people interested in sailing.
Right.
I think in some other clubs there are members, and I've got no argument with this, but there are members who are not in the sailing, but you can talk about sailing to anybody in the Ambulance when you walk through the door. And the other thing is there's no pecking order there. We're all, it's almost communist, we're all equal. We don't have groups of people who have this type of boat or this or that, they don't talk to the mob. We talk just as we go, and I think about five or six members of my family have been members, and I've been a member of such a since 48. It means a great deal to me.
What do you think the differences are between, say, the amateurs and the squadron or any of the Royal Clubs or even the CYC?
Well, I don't know much about the CYC, but I know a bit about the squadron. The squadron is the most prestigious and, shall we say, even the best club in Sydney on the basis. It's the best piece of real estate in Sydney. It faces northeast. You can get out of your motor car and walk down a few steps and you walk into the water. And it's also sheltered from all winds except a huge sou'easter that comes every several years. I've been there a few times as a guest, and I can't imagine I'd be able to go again because I'm physically handicapped. But I've always been welcome there, and people come in and say good day, Bill, and that sort of thing. But they have a wonderful racing fleet and that sort of thing. And there used to be a bit of feeling between the Ambulance and the squadron. We would say they stuck up buses around the corner. Delete that word buses.
Yep.
But people around the corner stuck up people, and they would say that funny little club around the corner. That's all gone, because there's a great feeling of camaraderie and recognition between the two clubs.
Yeah.
As far as the Cruising Yachts Club is concerned, I've never been interested in yachting, ocean racing. And I'll be honest, I would have been frightened to go in the Hobart race. To be caught, a massive seas in the Bass Strait, not for me.
Yeah.
I was never fit enough to do that anyway, but it didn't appeal to me, I don't know much about it. But I think they've done a great job there in promoting ocean racing, and they're world recognised. Yeah.
Of course, the Gale name is almost synonymous with Ranger and vice versa. When did you said you started sailing her when you were a small boy?
Yeah, not
with your father and with...
I was 12.
12.
Yeah.
And with your brothers?
Brother Roger sailed Ranger a bit. Brian, really. Brian was an 18-footer bloke. But the other brother was rare. He was forward hand in Ranger when I started. As a 12-year-old, and we had a crew. But the sails were quite small. Dad used to love to sail by himself. He sailed thousands of miles in boats by himself. He didn't hang on the first day. There was no spares. There was no winches, small sails. And it was very simple, and that meant he didn't get into trouble. Because of his skill, he had an unequal skill, and he was able to sail quite successfully with all these disadvantages caused by the cruising setup. But when I took over, of course, I put in the spirits and hanked on the four sandwiches and bought big sales and all that sort of thing.
So Ranger, of course, has been enormously successful as a racing boat in its class on the harbour. What do you think makes Ranger stand out from all the other boats that were basically built as copies of it?
Well, I think the big problem has been in the past that would give the plans to everyone with no charge. But either the builder or the owner and collaboration between, they all thought, made a bit longer here and a bit flatter there. And one boat, Kirill, she's a foot shorter and she's much smaller in the volume. And none of the Rangers until now have been a copy of Ranger. There's one launched up in northern New South Wales by a bloke named Mike Crenner. She is an exact copy. And Ian Smith's master boat builder is building one as we speak. And she'll be ready in about a year. But they will be. But there are some of the copies. One is longer, and she's flatter up, and she's a bit faster downwind, but I can beat it easily upwind. But I don't know why they all did. For example, Sparkman and Stevenson, great American designers, if you get a plan from them, you sign a form that you will not alter the shape of that boat.
Yeah.
And I am certain none of the others, all the ones, have been as good a Ranger all round.
Right. But it must also have something to do with the man whose hand's on the tiller, which is you.
Oh, well, I think I wasn't bad. I wasn't bad at starting the battle, a couple of that, with the photo on the wall later on, but I don't believe I'm set that none of the boats were as good as Ranger all round. The father's concept was the ultimate of it, and the next two boats, one built, one finished and one to come, they will be good as sail by equals, get as if possible, they'll be as good as Ranger. But none of the others are good around the whole cycle of winds, strong and hard.
Well, I've heard other members down at the Amateurs say that when in doubt, follow Bill Gale. So how important is all that local knowledge of the winds and tides in the harbour that you must have built up over 70 years?
Extremely important. My father, he was a dedicated sailor, but he loved it. Even when he went up the coast sailing around Bracken Bay by himself, he used to take the family away for 2 weeks and send us home with a bus from Palm Beach. And he'd wake up in the morning when he was by himself for a week, he'd have his breakfast and sail all day. And that's the joy of sailing. Mm. But he didn't just sail along. He couldn't help himself. The best was got out of the boat all the time. When he was young, he used to sail around Sydney Harbour in an 8-foot boat that his dinghy his father bought him. And on light days, he'd drop objects in the water and see where they floated. So he learned the tides by just watching it by observation. And he would observe the winds, and he just had a knowledge of where to go. And I wasn't very interested until after Hitler's war. I went sailing because I thought I ought to. I'd have sooner gone fishing. But I would say, but
I'm glad you didn't.
he had an enormous knowledge of tides in his mind that wasn't written down, of tides and where you go. And I could still remember it when I was sailing the boat. I followed his pattern largely, and that contributed greatly to what I was able to
so
do.
So did he encourage you to learn all this, or did you just sort of get it by osmosis?
I just went down. He encouraged me, and he bought a dinghy for me to sail, to learn me to sail an 8-foot, 9-foot dinghy with a cat rig. And at Bacon Bay, we'd go for holiday, and he'd take me. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to get back to fishing. And in the end, he gave up. And I wish I could have gone back later and picked up these things. But even so, he taught me a lot there. But I used to, when I was crewing, I ended up being floor hand for him for many years. I would watch him all the time. And I sat in the back myself, without really thinking about it, I would subconsciously, what would Dad do here? And I'd do that. It was there, with that in my head. If you are young enough and you sail all the time, you learn all these things, but you don't know that you learn it.
This is the way you learned from your father.
It's the way I learned from my father, although I wasn't really interested, except that when I sailed with him after the war, I went back sailing with him, became very interested. And I've been sailing about for years and years. I would sail in a place where Dad had gone in that circumstance of wind and tide without seeing. That's what Dad would have done. I just knew what he did.
So getting back to the amateurs, what was sailing like out of the amateurs, say, 70 years ago as compared to today?
Oh, look, 70 years ago, I don't think we had a club for 70 years ago. We were close to it. But I think the 70 years ago, the atmosphere was good. We had cotton sails, which was a menace because if they got wet, they didn't dry them properly. They had mildew all over them, that sort of thing. And I think the atmosphere of people, among the people, were very good 70 years ago. We had a very good atmosphere 70 years ago. And that has continued right to the present day. I must say that about, say, 50 years ago, 45 years ago, we often had a difficult person or persons, no more than two. We had those who were impossible. And there was very, so much say you look in the clubhouse over there, you wouldn't want to go in. But that's gone.
You know, that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. I haven't been down there for some 5 years, but in the last 20 years, there's been a very good atmosphere in the club, and no difficult people. That's good.
So you're saying that really the camaraderie and the atmosphere at the club today is probably better than it was 50 years ago.
It's better than it was 50 years ago. 50 years ago, we had one or two people who were complaining all the time and telling lies. For example, one bloke, he would discuss boats, including me, rather than say, well, they beat him, and they just couldn't beat the people they were talking about. But they were convinced in their own mind that they did, and that caused lots of ruckus. But I haven't been down there for some years now, but for 20, 30 years, I didn't see an argument in the club. They must have happened, but I was not witness to an argument. That's unusual.
So who are the great characters from the club that you recall?
The great characters were the Merrings in the family. There was Ernest and Bill and John Merrington, and they all sailed boats every Saturday for years and years, and they were great members of the club. They sailed the boats beautifully. They were all very good hillmen, and they'd never caused any problems, and they'd go out of the way to help. They were great characters. And there was that Merrington family. Who else would there be? All sorts of good guys would just sail the boats and go and sail for the fun, and they would obey the rules, and there weren't any problems. But the one that strikes me is the Merringtons, and there are others for sure. And one of the great ones was, he didn't sail the Amateurs in my time, he's Dr. Hamilton Kirkland, and he eventually sailed the boat that was more suitable to sail in this squadron, and he sailed against Dad many times. And when I was about 10 at the basin on the beach, he said, come here, I want to talk to you. Yes, doctor. He said, I want you to know that your father is far and away the best skipper in Sydney Harbour. And nobody else can get near me, him. And Dad always said, nobody's better than Kirkland.
No, but mutual admiration.
Yeah, mutual admiration. And they were Both were very good. Kirkland was that good. He sailed a cruising 35-footer, a cruising boat in the second division of the squadron, and his competitors were 6 metres and 30 square metres, and he wasn't the limit boat. He was just marvellous.
Now, you sailed a 5.5 metre yes. boat at one stage, I think.
Yes.
Everybody associates you with the gaff rig, but you were a Bermudan rig sailor as well. There is obviously a difference between the two, but do you have a preference?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The word Bermudian is not Bermudan. Bermudian is wrong. No. My authority for that is William Fife the Third, Charles Nicholson, and a great cruising boat designer, but doesn't matter. No. But they all said Bermudian. If you come from Bermuda, the people say where you're from, you say, I am a Bermudian. Bermudian's gone into the language.
Right. Mind you, of course, Fife was a Scotsman, so maybe he was mixed up with his accent.
He was a Scotsman. Yeah, I thought it was said, people would say straight, you are, they'd say to me and my brothers and my father, you are one eyed about the gap. It's absolutely wrong because the father enjoyed sailing the Josephine 9-metre Bermudian rig more than any other boat.
Right.
And I had enormous pleasure out of sailing Southern Cross 2, and my brother Rogers sailed the Finn class, and she was Bermudian rig, the Finn, but we, at the same time, we could see virtue in both rigs, but the average Bermudian bloke says that we're one-eyed about gaff rig, but they're one-eyed about Bermudian, but I see virtues in both rigs.
Right. Going back to the club again, in recent years we've seen working bees of club members, and they've been taking on really big maintenance projects like recladding the boat shed and doing all those really heavy duty type things. How essential do you think that volunteering to that extent has been part of the reason for the success of the club?
Oh, look, it's very essential because it promotes the good feeling of the club. You get down there and they have a barbecue and that sort of thing. In my younger days, particularly the year we took the club over, we spent every weekend and worked there, and there was always a barbecue. I think they might have given us a beer, I can't remember. But the fact that you met all sorts of people, we did it ourselves, and that promoted a feeling within the club, which is different to any other club, I think. I think we're the only club that's been done. I might be wrong, I think all clubs, apart from us, are done professionally. And because we stand around the barbecue and work alongside each other and are proud of what we did, that puts that special feeling we have within that club.
And that's been happening since the club moved to the present site.
Yeah, we worked every Sunday for months when we first took over the club. And if anything needs to be done, they can call on the volunteers and they'll do it. I suppose other clubs, it's all done professionally, and that's fine. But I think the working bees give a special feeling of camaraderie within the club.
It seems that in earlier times, the Amateurs was very much a family club, and yet today we see an ageing membership and perhaps the need for some younger, fresher faces. Are you optimistic about the future of the Amateurs?
Yes. I think there's junior members there, and very importantly, since the war, we've had female members, lady members is the right word. Now, when you have lady members, they tend to keep the place neat, and they'll do things. Also, behaviour is better there. If a lady's there, if there's a man's club only, there's bad language, that sort of thing. And I think people tend to get into arguments. Having girls around the place improves the behaviour, and they look a lot better than blokes anyway.
And not only that, they're sometimes better sailors, because when you look at today's Olympic sailors, half of them are women, and they are some of the best in the world.
Oh, Nikki Bethway.
Yeah.
The famous Bethway family. Nikki sailed around at one time, I wrote. And she sailed the boat. She'd never been in such a boat. She'd been She'd sail in yachts, but Ranger's very different than average. But she sailed it perfectly. And there's just no doubt about it. Another advantage, I think, particularly the liner yacht, is the women turn to way less than blokes. And a light person right on the stern is better for the boat than a heavy person.
Right, right.
And the other thing, I used to have girls on the crew a lot of girls, and if I said pull the jib on, they would do that. If I had some expert in parentheses, I'd say, would you pull the jib on? But no, it shouldn't be easy, they'd eat it. And you'd get experts that sit and argue with me. I wouldn't ask them again, because I wouldn't abuse them on the day, but I wouldn't ask them again. I knew from my father how the boat behaved, how it should behave, or what the trim should be. Boats would come aboard the boat that never raced in Jeff Regal, such a boat, and they just didn't understand. And they thought what I was doing was wrong. But my father set it all up, and I followed his opinion, and that was
it. Now, your father took your mother on their honeymoon sailing.
Yes.
In Vagabond, I think.
Correct.
All the way up the Hawkesbury.
Yes,
which
to Bagger Bay.
Which caused a bit of a stir.
It caused a bit of a stir because it particularly, not so much of the basin, but around Refuge Bay, the men would walk around the beach naked when they were swimming. Well, if they were swimming, they'd just take their clothes off and swim out. And they couldn't do that when Mum was there. And they were quite hostile about it. One funny little story, it was raining one day on the honeymoon, and he had an awning and side curtains and a fore curtain, so the boat was closed off.
It was an open boat, wasn't it?
An open boat, yeah. Well, yeah, she had what they call a half deck. It wasn't half deck, she was decked in about a quarter or fifth of the way. And they put up on the boom, he put curtains all around so they couldn't be seen. And Dad was ashore, and Mum was washing herself out of a basin in the cockpit, and the set line went off. And she grabbed it, and all the mates around, they could see the big fish. Phone, Mr. Gale, phone. And she was terrified. She eventually got a plane in the floor. And of course, we're talking, what are we talking about, 1913, I think. And ladies weren't very happy in circumstances like that.
I can imagine. I wonder sometimes, well, you might have wondered too, what your father, Cliff, would have made of today's boat design and construction, you know, canting keels and computers and GPS and stuff. Would he have been interested in it, do you think?
No, he would have. He said, that's rubbish, because canting keels are dangerous. No matter what they say, it's dangerous. And a lot of the boats, Ranger, for example, and many boats of the area, they would do exactly what you wanted them to do. I sailed the boat for years, but she never let me down. And if there was a problem, it was me. Mm. The boat never misbehaved. But some of the modern yachts, I've seen them, I'm sailing around, they don't behave themselves in some circumstances. They just decide they'll go to the window and do something ridiculous. Dad wouldn't have approved of it, no. Mm. He would have liked to have seen the ability of the boat and the speed of it, but he wouldn't have liked it in no way.
I read again somewhere that your father Cliff notched up, I think it was 69 years of competitive racing.
Yeah.
And I've also been told that you, at some time ago, reached 60 consecutive years of racing.
I think so.
I think you would have passed that now. What I'm going to ask you is, have you beaten the old man?
Have I beaten him?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I can't remember sailing boats in different. If we did, he and I would have been different sorts of boats. I don't feel comment on that one. I am certain that in his time that nobody approached his skill. Mm. And Hemel and Kirkland said that. And other boats. For example, Lex Buckle had Charlie Hayes built the Cruising 9-metre in 1933. And he said to Dad, would you like to sail it? Of course he did. And she was a Bermudian rig. And Dad said, That was the best boat he ever sailed. Now, he was scratch boat in the Royal Clubs Saturday afternoon, Saturday, but she wasn't the fastest boat. The 8 metres were faster than the cruising nine and other boats, other big boats. She was a beautiful, a magnificent fast boat, but as a cruising nine, she was heavier boat than many compared. We were still scratched. And he also, one time in the basin in his 80s, the kids were sailing moths off the beach, the kids in the camp, and they'd sail around a buoy out near the end of Soldiers Point.
Mm-hmm.
They'd take off the race, all get in a bunch, and they'd sail up and down. They'd do that four or five times a day. And once when he's in his 80s, they said, "Would you like to sail one, Mr. Gale?" They said, "Yes." He beat them hands down. There was just nobody could get near him. And then he went an 18-footer race here one time in 1938. They invited all the prominent yacht skippers in Sydney to sail an 18-footer in a Sunday race. And he went out and out of the hat, he drew the lightning.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lightning had never won a race. And he went down and not one of the crew had ever sailed with her. And they said, "We don't know how to rig it." He said, "I'll show you." He knew how to do it. And they went out and they said, "Because we weren't any good today." He said, "No, we'll win today." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We will win today, I'm sure. Get to the bookings, babe, we'll get some money on." And they couldn't get there in time. During the race, they wouldn't put a spinnaker up. He made them put a balloon up and they kept letting the sheet go because they'd put all their money on the Collaroy. Here's the crew of Lightning.
Right.
And he said, "Pull it on and fasten it. Now, if we fasten it around a cleat, seal caps and eyes." He said, "That's my worry." He said, "You do it, or I'll report you to the league committee that you disobeyed the skipper's orders. And I think you could be in trouble." So they fastened it, didn't swim. He won narrowly.
He won the race.
I mean, he won narrowly. The Black Jack Backhouse, very good woman, he was in Collaroy, also owned. She was owned by the owner of Lightning, and who never won a race. The Collaroy was a champion boat, and they set spinnakers, ringtails, a whole lot. But Dad still beat them in. And interestingly enough, Dad was a dental mechanic, and he was at work. And three blokes knocked on the door the following Monday. And he said, "What are they talking about?" "Yesterday's race." He said, "Okay, what do you want to know?" "We want to you to sail an 18-footer every Sunday, and you can go to any sailmaker, any builder you like, any designer. And you'll say, 'Is that very nice of you, fellas?'" He said, "There's a problem." "What's that?" He said, "I will be flat out to win every Sunday." And they said, "Well, we're bookmakers, you know." And we wouldn't want it. He said, "That's what I thought." And they said, "We'll see you later." I walked out the door.
I was going to end up, Bill, with asking you about Ranger again, because it's now permanently part of the club, isn't it? How did the Ranger Trust come into being?
Well, Dad designed this was his last boat. He had no mathematical ability. He left school at 11, I think. And he could do sort of simple arithmetic, no mathematics. He designed all his boats. He would make a layer cake of cedar and pine and cover it by eye, all by the city of us. And he'd put dowel sticks to hold that all together. When he designed that shape, he would pull the dowel sticks out, disassemble the timbers. And from that, he would draw the plans. And he would draw the mast there and draw the rig. Just freehand. He was just, that's the way it ought to be. And people were interested in it, and gradually people said, "Let's have a Ranger." He gave them a plan, and they altered it a bit. As I say, some of them were very close. Lead LPJ, he built the Cherub, which is quite similar. And she now owned by two marvellous members in the club. One is Vice Commodore, the other a historian, the two marvellous blokes.
and she's moored next to me.
Moored next to you.
Yeah, I've got the mooring next to
They're marvellous, mate. They're marvellous members. And they're saying it very well. She is quite similar. Kilkey, another one, was built for a Dr. Deck, I think, by Holmes. But Holmes also a bit... And they're all a bit different, except the two that one's been launched now. And Ed Smith will be exactly the same. But I would never give the plans to anybody who didn't guarantee to me that they would not alter it.
And so the boat, the future of the boat now is assured, isn't it, Ranger, at the Amateurs?
Yes. Blake has bought it. He was working for Langman Boat Yard, saw Langman Boat Yard. He's changed his job now. But he is an expert, even from engines to looking after the whole lot. And he's a very good woman. And he has retained my old crew. My two older blokes in their 70s, but he's got a couple of very young blokes moving a forward hand. He is a very good gentleman, and he is maintaining the boat better than I could, because that's his job. I was not a trained boat maintainer, engine maintainer. And his wife is a very good, very, very good gentleman. In fact, he claims she sold the boat better than he. Yeah. And the kids love it. There's been years as a family boat, and they've gone for holidays to Broken Bay. And the kids say all the time, "When are you taking us back to Broken Bay, Dad?" So he came and took over the boat, and I gave him the key, and he sailed out of Mossman's Bay. I didn't feel the pain when she went. I didn't feel a loss of any sort. Whereas if a person had bought it, I would fear that they wouldn't use it to leave in the morning. So I'm more than happy that he's got it, because he's sailing the Amateurs and sailing it beautifully and that sort of thing.